Hello and hi, welcome to a new year and some more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm your host, Summer Brooks, and today we're going to dive into a dramatic series that touches on a subject close to my heart, UFOs. History Channel has a brand new series starting January 8th, 10 p.m. Eastern, called Project Blue Book. It is a dramatic look at the actual investigations done by Dr. J. Allen Hynek in the 50s and 60s. And with me today is the creator of this series, producer, writer, David O'Leary. Hi, David.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. This, I have always loved History Channel's dive into the, shall we say, the unexplained aerial phenomenon.
Yes, the unknown.
Yes, and yeah, I got addicted to Ancient Aliens, and I am proud to say that. So when I heard Project Blue Book was coming along, I went, oh, really? Tell me more. So first of all, tell what was it about this project that said to you that, you know, this is a story I need to tell?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I you know, like you, I think I have had a lifelong sort of fascination with mystery, with the unknown, with the unexplained. You know, and one of those questions has always been for me is like, are we alone in the universe? I think that's a seminal question we have to ask ourselves. And I don't, you know, I personally don't believe that you can look at that answer truthfully without examining the UFO issue. And so, you know, for me growing up, even as a kid, I was always, you know, I was then, I think, more fascinated with sort of the present-day UFO phenomena, you know, what was happening in the 80s and 90s as I sort of came of age. But as I got a little older in my 20s, I started to look back at, you know, America's very strange and mysterious history with this subject matter. And, you know, the seminal body of work, you know, in terms of like our official history and government history is, of course, Project Blue Book, which was the real life U.S. Air Force investigations into UFOs. And, you know, both in terms of studying, you know, as an investigatory arm, studying what is the nature of this phenomenon, and then, of course, looking at it through the lens of, you know, and is it a threat to national security? And in my research into Project Blue Book, it became, you know, I quickly found out all about Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who, of course, was this real-life civilian astrophysicist recruited by the Air Force to be their chief scientific advisor to go out there and, you know, interview witnesses and examine case files, to determine, you know, what was going on here, what were people seeing in the skies. And he was a complete skeptic, but through his tenure with Project Blue Book, of course, he shifted sides and became a believer, and not only became convinced that UFOs are an intelligence in our skies that we've yet to understand, but also became convinced that, you know, unfortunately, Project Blue Book itself was in many ways a disinformation campaign used to control public perception about UFOs. So, and then, you know, he spent the rest of his life, of course, devoting his life to this subject matter, you know, and is responsible for many of the terms we now know, like the Close Encounters classification system, of course, was his. The term UFO spawned out of Project Blue Book. So it was just a fascinating, you know, for me, it just was a marriage of both great story, great kind of arc, great journey, and then just a lifelong passion. Because I'm a writer, right? I'm a film and TV writer living in LA, but I'm also just a UFO nut, you know, just like it's a UFO, you know, I mean, I'm just somebody who really tries to look at this issue seriously and really tries to cut through all the fat out there and get at what's really going on. And I do believe that there's a genuine, true, real life mystery that is still happening. And I just feel so lucky that I get to be a small piece of kind of like telling this story and like, and continuing the discussion, which what I hope it will be a real and sober and interesting and you know, discussion on this subject matter as more people become open-minded to like, wow, every case we look at on the show, you know, really happened.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the structure of the show. Each episode, season one is 10 episodes long, and each episode follows the investigation into each particular case, including like the Lubbock Lights, which is the big one that I had known about. The other ones are not quite so familiar, but like each one follows a particular case, and like I said, so far I've seen the first three episodes, and the way each case sort of leads into the next one, and with it comes an increasing tension of both concern and fear amongst the Air Force officers who are in charge of the project. Plus, you've got the paranoia that's just in the atmosphere because of the Cold War, and it sort of seeps into it colors everything they do, even though they might not realize it. The paranoia of the fear of Russia and being nuked into the Stone Age colors everything that everybody looked at or read or felt or saw back then. And it didn't, it didn't click in for me until you saw the scene. There's a scene in the I think the first episode where the kid is watching,
it's an air raid. And oh, I can remember the town. We had to find a great clip. And it's true to the era. Oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the town.
It was
right
a town.
Now.
It was a town in Washington. It was a town in Washington.
Like where? Yeah, that's right. That's right. It has like a. Oh god, I can't remember the name of it. But it's basically they would televise these air raid drills on the news, where then they would evacuate like kids and pedestrians from a city in the case of an attack of an atomic bomb or a nuclear weapon or something like that. And it was all about like what to do if this happens. And we just found it so fascinating to examine, as much as we could, that phenomenon, not only through our main characters, but even through the eyes of a child. Mm-hmm. And, because it's like, what's it like when you're growing up in the 1950s and you're living in a society that every day fears that like tomorrow could be, basically World War III or like a nuclear, an atomic attack, a nuclear attack. So it's, and I think you hit it right on the head in terms of, listen, there was genuine fear. Obviously people went about their lives and tried to, live as normal lives as they can. But of course, permeating underneath that in the 1950s was this fear of invasion and fear that we may destroy ourselves.
And that combined with, there was a scene where the generals are all watching a clip of the day the earth stood still, and there's the contempt in that, in their just disdain for the movie. I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, really?
Oh, and by the way, it's a movie I love. I think it's just great. The original is such a classic. I used to show it when I used to teach it at film school, and I would like show it in my like genre class to film school students and stuff like that, because I just thought it was so great.
It's a wonderful movie, and just seeing how you portrayed their anger and disdain at it, I thought that was a brilliant touch.
Right. Oh, thanks. Well, one of the things we wanted to examine was, the culture of the time always responds to the real life fears of the time, right? So, we see that happen now. Like in the 50s, right? It was fear of, fear of nuclear war, fear of invasion. So what's the cultural kind of pop cultural reaction? It's the boom of sci-fi movies and comic books, right? Which can about like superhero figures who can save us from ourselves and all that kind of stuff. Now we see it again. I mean, unfortunately, we still live in a world now where there's, we're massively divided. We fear everything from, regardless of what your political beliefs are, to, from, are we going to destroy ourselves with the environment? Are we going to destroy ourselves, with some sort of war and attack, whether it be from Russia or China or North Korea or whatever. And what we see again is now we see the rise of comic book movies, right? Like, it's our 21st century comic book about these superhero figures that can come in with like their special powers and kind of save us. So, we wanted to kind of take a look at that, but then also examine it through the eyes in the scene you're talking about with the day the earth stood still, through the lens of like, is this helping matters, especially given the agenda of what those men have to do in terms of trying to kind of quell the, stomp down on the hysteria of like, oh my God, flying saucers are real and we're being invaded and all that kind of stuff, which of course all these pop sci-fi movies sort of embraced, that aliens were coming and the Martians were here and all that kind of stuff.
Now, how much of any original source material, any original research, government files did you access or did you want to access to do some research for this? Because I know the
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Dr. Hynek himself passed away, what, 85, 86, something like that. But
Yeah, 86,
the
yeah.
legacy of work he left behind is vast.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So we looked at a number of things. So Dr. Allan Hynek wrote three books, right? The most famous is probably The UFO Experience. So that became like and that is the book where he really lays out his Close Encounters classification system. That's where he lays out the notion that, as the chief scientific advisor of Project Blue Book, he really believes that UFOs are real and are worthy of academic study. He lays out numerous theories, by the way, about what he thinks we might be dealing with. I think the extraterrestrial hypothesis is sort of the most common hypothesis and sort of the one that that people go down the fastest, that what we're dealing with is extraterrestrial. But Hynek was a very open, he was a scientist and he didn't want to make any determinations until all the evidence becomes clear, and he didn't feel that all the evidence was there. He knew that he felt that the nature of the phenomena is an intelligence that we don't understand, but he was also open to the idea that it might be interdimensional. He was even open to the idea that it could be evidence of time travel. We might be dealing with like some sort of visitation by our future selves that we don't understand, or even like extraterrestrial artificial intelligence, given some of the reports that he came across. But so we looked at that. We went back and looked at, the first director of Project Blue Book wrote a wonderful book called The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects. His name was Captain Ed Ruppelt, upon which the Michael Mullarkey character is loosely based. And his book also, by the way, he came out, a quote unquote believer as well, and was very kind of critical of the U.S. Air Force and how they treated Project Blue Book, and how they used it really more as a publicity mission, not so much as an investigatory arm as he felt they could have. So his book was great. It was filled with sort of seminal cases. And then we, of course, like, I mean, the Project Blue Book files are now available online through the National Archives. This was not always the case. So you can go back and look at the case files themselves. You can go look at the report in 19, there was something called the Robertson Panel in 1953, where like Project Blue Book sort of presented to the CIA and the Congress some of its best cases up to that point. So that's really interesting. All those files you can download. But even with a lot of these case files, you'll see that some of them are redacted. Some of them you can only find a photograph, but there's no information about who took that photograph or what that photograph was. So it was, reports came in. It came into Project Blue Book in all sorts of ways, and they were cataloged in all sorts of ways as well. So it's not an ex it's relatively exhaustive, but like I, people come forward and tell me all the time, like, yeah, my buddy found, like, there was some reports from Project Blue Book that they found, like, there's still things that are sort of all over. Mostly it's now compartmentalized and we have found it, but there are reports that slip through the cracks all the time. And Project Blue Book only examined the UFO cases that came to them. I mean, there were other sightings that people wouldn't always necessarily report to Project Blue Book, or that Project Blue Book would get wind of, so.
Yeah, I think it's only been within probably the past 20, 25 years that people have started reading reports about UFO sightings and reports throughout all of North America, South America, China, Southeast Asia, Russia, Australia. There's been so much going
Right.
on for so long. We just don't have the tools yet to maybe figure it out. I'm a big fan of the old Twilight Zone episode where it turns out humans are just a zoo and people are just flying by
Right.
going, and to your left
Precisely.
you'll see the Eiffel Tower, and to your right you'll
That's
see
right.
this, and then they just
I've seen
take
it. I've
off.
seen that Twilight. I love the Twilight Zone, by the way, and I would be remiss not to say that I think that had a huge influence, at least on a tonal level, even for this show. That kind of Twilight Zone uneasiness, that paranoia, that general fear. It was like I remember when our marketing team informed us, because like every year, I think it's the Sci-Fi Channel does a a Twilight Zone marathon.
Yep.
And when they told us that we were going to have some ads up for the show with that, I was just like, oh, that is so great, because I've gone through years where I've just done a series recording and recorded every episode. So I was like, ah, it's so cool to, like, you know, even permeate that space. But yeah, I mean, listen, you know, it's going back to your thing about, you know, do we live in a zoo? I mean, some people, you know, another theory about UFOs that some people believe are, like, you know, it's sort of the Elon Musk simulated reality hypothesis, you know, that UFOs represent in some way, you know, the quote unquote game masters interacting with the game sphere or something, you know? So, like, the answers, I think it's like the riddle goes on and on about what may be the answer here. And I sort of take Hynek's approach in that we just don't know yet, but he has a great quote, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it's something along the lines of, you know, he believes that to understand UFOs may just be, you know, like the seminal piece to understand our place in the universe as well, you know? And I think there's some truth in that. At the very least, we may learn, you know, we're not alone, or we may learn that there are alternate dimensions, or that time travel is possible, or that, you know what I mean? Or like that there's some people think UFOs may be some form of life that exists that we don't understand yet, you know, an intelligence that evolved on this planet. Like it just goes on and on. So it's, you know, but what I think people need to understand is that if you are a logical, rational person who likes to just look at the evidence and look at the types of, you know, people who report these things, you're going to quickly figure out that these are not just like attention seeking, you know, folks looking to make a name for themselves. These are credible people who are with trained eyes. These are military personnel. These are astronauts. These are, you know, these are every walk of life. You can, you know, politicians, you know, police officers. These are multiple, you know, multiple witnesses who don't want to come forward and then do, you know, because they have to tell their story. These are just, you know, there's a genuine nature to the phenomena that is real and unexplained. And, you know, my hope is just that the show, in an entertaining, you know, way, and of course, in an educational way, takes us through our history with this phenomena and connects the past with the present, because the mysteries persist. You know, this is a mystery that still occurs. I mean, right? I mean, there's the UFO sightings all the time, even now. It's just harder to kind of weed through the clutter to get at the genuine cases, but they happen all the time.
Yeah, I think I'm one of the people who's in the camp of just release all the information already. The old saw that people can't handle it. They'll go insane. Have you seen this planet the past 15 years? Are you serious?
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's an interesting, I was having a conversation recently with somebody, and it's an interesting prospect about, you know, what would happen, you know, globally, if we were to, you know, just learn that, regardless of where the truth lies, like the mystery, you know, like I definitely believe in the genuine mystery, and I also believe that there is a cover up to the extent, at least, of we are still figuring out what is the nature of what we're dealing with as well. But listen, I'm also open minded to the idea that the government may know much, much more than that. But I definitely think that I think the evidence is clear that they are trying to cover up the fact that we're dealing with a genuine. That there would be a paradigm shift in our understanding of reality if this information were to come forward in all the ways we've already laid out. The question then becomes, what does that paradigm shift look like? And that's where people, like, yeah, I mean, it's tough to know. I'm trying to think of, like, you know, when was the last time, like, our planet experienced, like a major paradigm shift in our understanding of the universe? You know what I mean? Was it when we learned that, like, you know, the sun doesn't orbit us and we orbit the sun? Or was it when, like, we learned, like, oh, like our solar system is one of many and our galaxy is one of many? It's like, you know, that we keep kind of peeling back what we always thought was true. The further we dig, the more we kind of realize, oh, that was just, you know, seemingly true, you know? And and so, yeah, I mean, I think it would be a fascinating, I mean, my thinking on the whole thing is, like, you can't argue with the reality of it. You can't argue with the truth of it. So the paradigm shift that we're kind of discussing is, you know, I don't know what that looks like, but I hope that it looks the way that you're describing, that, like, people are sort of ready to take a real to take the real leap to understand, okay, something genuine is happening here. But gosh, like, what, how that changes everything that we already have established. I think the ripple effects are vast. And I think it's everything from, you know, I mean, it's just from religion to you know, energy to socio-political divides. I mean, it's a big transition we're talking about.
It is. The optimist in me would hope that it would change the way we all treat and look at each other. The cynic in me goes, just like with everything new, the first applications will be reality TV, commerce, and porn.
Well, you know what's interesting? I agree with you because I think it's too big. It's too big to commodify. It's too big to... It goes to the very essence of, like, sort of, you know, what is the meaning of life? What is the nature of our reality? What is the purpose of us being here? What is, you know, why are we here? All that stuff. And I think that I'm hopeful as you are that I think that it would, you know, listen, we don't know the what's the motivation of what we're dealing with either, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? But putting that aside, just looking at human beings and what it would do to human beings, you know, gosh, you know, that's my hope as well. I think that there is more good in humanity than there is bad. And I think that in our greatest struggles, we tend to triumph, and, you know, altruism wins over, you know, fear and hate and all that kind of stuff every time.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think it would apply here as well. But I think there would be, I think it would be true to humanity. I mean, I think we would react in all the ways we hope and in all the ways we fear simultaneously.
Yeah.
But I do think that our hope would, you know, our good would outwin our bad ultimately. And we would evolve as a culture in the society and understand, okay, like, what's now what, you know?
Yeah. It would definitely take a lot of people with better angels speaking in a more, shall we say, hopeful vein.
Yeah.
And I just hope that those people are in the right place at the right time when the time comes. Because eventually...
Me too.
Yeah, eventually I believe there's going to be that, shall we say, rude awakening moment. And a lot of people are going to have to decide for themselves what that means to how they viewed life on this planet, life in the galaxy. Because that was my wake-up call. I took the astronomy classes, the science classes in high school and college, and realizing that, wait, our solar system is literally the sticks beyond the boonies of the Milky Way.
Yeah.
How did we think we were the center of everything for so long?
Oh, yeah. You ever watch, there's a great short film that I think they updated and they put it online. I think it's called The Powers of Ten or something like that. And it starts at like a man in Central Park, and then it just starts to zoom away from a man in Central Park at powers of 10. So like they're 10 square meters away, 100 square meters, 1,000, and it just goes on and
mm-hmm.
on.
Yeah, I remember
on.
That. I remember
and
that.
And then it shoots all the way back into his hand, and it goes all the way inside as well, like to negative 10, and you know, like it's baffling. It's just like it I've seen that video. Like I can just watch that video and be like, okay, like what is happening? Like, you know, what is going on here? So it's, you know, but those are the things that I think the show, you know, on a Broadway really tries to examine. I mean, this, you know, it's a show that looks at mystery. It's a show that looks at cover up and conspiracy. It's a show that looks at secrecy. It's a show that looks at identity. You know, who are we as people? I think every character on the show is also struggling with their own self identity at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's rooted in real life cases. You know what I mean? It's it's got benchmarks every step of the way, you know, and when, I'm excited that, you know, people are starting to re-examine some of these great classic cases, whether it be the Gorman incident or the Flatwoods Monster case or the Lubbock Lights case or, you know, all the wonderful cases that we explore just in this first season. I mean, there's just so many. There's such an abundance of riches. We had to be like, we really tried to be as truthful as we could within a certain chronological window, and while also trying to give audiences a slice of just the diversity of the sort of high strangeness of UFOs themselves. Because, like, I think, you know, people always tend to think of them as, you know, they think of the classic disc in the sky when you think of a UFO, but like, there's so many different types of UFO sightings in different ways in which this phenomenon manifests. So it's you know, are we dealing with one thing? Are we dealing with many things? Are we dealing with multiple series we just laid out kind of happening simultaneously? It's like it's tricky to fully know right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and then we're hopeful that we're just telling also just a very kind of an entertaining, character driven drama that is designed to also just, you know, take audiences on a ride. You know, we twist and turn, but it's all rooted inside of the truth is stranger than fiction kind of idea. And it's just like, the more we look into it, it's like the more we're like, oh my gosh, we could use that. And it's just like, we like can't cram it all in. I mean, I have so much research that I'm just like, season two, okay, like, you know, like, I want to do these cases, like, what if we gotta explore this element, there's all these reports of this or that, like, you know, so it's just, we got as much into season one as we possibly could, you know, and hope that, you know, that audiences just take that ride with us.
Well, I hope they do too, because like I said, I'm enjoying it so far, the mix of the tension of trying to figure out what they're investigating, combined with the Cold War paranoia and what seems to be two separate espionage potential, shall we say, monkey wrenches?
Totally. I mean, listen, there is definitely, you know, this is amidst the Cold War. So this is both a UFO show, but this is also an espionage show. This is also a government conspiracy show. I don't want to say too much, but we definitely look at some other things that were happening at the time in terms of government and intelligence gathering, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm hoping that we give audiences both the UFO show that they want, but also a show that they don't expect, and be truthful to, like, that there was so much happening at that time period, and we try to lay it all out there and be like, this is what was going on, and it was just a fascinating time, you know. It's a fascinating time to be alive now. It's a fascinating time to be alive then.
This, like I said, this is something I'm going to recommend people who are interested in thrillers in 1950s style, shall we say, covert operations and, investigating UFOs and aliens. This show is hitting the marks for me so far. I'm having a wonderful time watching it. And I hope you do get to, like, a season two, a season three, because this is just fun.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah, hey, listen, we've had a blast. It is a wonderful team. You know what I mean? The cast is just, they're some of the best people, the crew, the directors. I mean, everybody just, I think, really wanted to make a great show, and I think really brought their A game. And I'm just so impressed by everybody involved. And, you know, I hope everybody will tune in and enjoy the show. And, you know, please let me know. I look forward to hearing what people think of it. You know, I'm easy to find on social media and all that good stuff. So you know, and I want to continue the discussion, with everybody, because I think this is a discussion that affects all of us.
Okay, so where can people find you? Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram. I'm David E. O'Leary, O-L-E-A-R-Y is my handle, David E. O'Leary. So those are probably the best places.
Cool. Well, we will let people know where they can find you. David, Thank you. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. We had a great talk.
And okay. the show is Project Blue Book, begins airing on History Channel January 8th. That's Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern. Tune in. You will not be disappointed. And with that, we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pohl, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hey guys, this is Arjun Gupta from Sci-Fi's The Magician, and you are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Yeah, that talk with David was so much fun. I really have been looking forward to the show ever since I saw the first ads for it a long time ago. And now that it's here, I'm not disappointed. And if you have any interest in UFO investigations, UFO research, the history of the investigations done by Project Blue Book, this show, I think, will entertain and educate. So check it out. Again, History Channel, Tuesday, January 8th, 10 p.m. Eastern. And it's a, like I said, it's a 10-episode series. And we'll definitely be talking about this later. Other shows returning for 2019. Manifest continues with new episodes on Monday night, January 7th. Looking forward to that. I actually don't think The Gifted took a break over the holidays. And what else is coming back? Black Lightning should be returning. The Magicians starts up at the end of the month on Sci-Fi Channel. We also have Deadly Class starting up, I believe, that's the 19th of January. And you can already watch the premiere episode on several streaming venues, sci-fi.com, the Sci-Fi app. I believe YouTube also has it. So check that out. I'm not sure about Deadly Class yet. I remember the comic, and I've seen the preview episode, and I'm not hooked yet. But I'm willing to give it a shot. Other things off the top of my head I can name that we're looking forward to would be Captain Marvel and, of course, Avengers Endgame. And actually, there are a whole lot of movies. Glass comes up at the end of January. We're looking forward to that one. What else is coming? Oh, I think February we have Happy Death Day to You. And we have a few more other movies coming up that I don't have at the top of my head, so we will talk about those later. But for now, if you have any questions or comments on Project Blue Book or Ancient Aliens or anything else in that vein that you want to talk about or ask questions about, the number is 602-635-6976, or you can send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and on TuneIn. You can leave us a review on Stitcher or iTunes, please do so. Let other people know that you are enjoying the show and that maybe they should check it out too, see what they're missing. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can check us out on YouTube and Facebook as well. And of course, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com, where you can weigh in, leave comments on the shows, leave comments on the movie and TV reviews that we have done, and weigh in with your own ratings as well. If you disagree with what our reviewers have determined as the ratings for the movies and TV shows they've watched, we've watched, because I'm one of those too. I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting the show through your pledges through Patreon. Every dime you guys pledge helps keep things on here. The website hosting, the media hosting, all the pledges and donations you provide help me keep these things online. It takes a little bit of the financial burden off of me, and for that, I do thank you. If you want to help support what we've got going on here and at Writers After Dark and Babylon Podcast and Horror Happenings, we've got a whole bunch of playgrounds around here, the place to go is Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you want to do a one-time donation every now and then, the paypal.me link is paypal.me/scifisummer. I'd also like to thank my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for providing the musical flavor for the show. Thank you, guys. I love you dearly. Can't wait to run into you guys again. If you want to hear more music by these guys, go to their website, sci-fried.com, or search for Sci-Fried on YouTube. You will not be disappointed, trust me. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.